I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Obviously, we've been talking a lot of Pats here, but obviously I want to talk more Pats draft. And that's why I have Alex Barth here from 98.5. The Fan, I believe it is, in Boston. The Sports Hub, excuse me.
Sports Hub.
My apologies.
Yeah.
Thing I want to say is, obviously, look, BQBA has been the motto most of the offseason for Pats fans. But today, a weird mock draft came out with J.J. McCarthy at number 3. I've seen, you and I are both in the Jaden Daniels boat. But the biggest thing I've seen is the whole thing about Jaden Daniels, if, like, you know, J.J. was in the SEC. But the thing I saw, which impressed me, was if Jaden was in the Big Ten, Michigan's probably winning every game by 30.
Yeah, that was an obscene take. And the people who say, oh, well, yeah, you know, Jaden Daniels' numbers wouldn't be as good at Michigan. Well, they wouldn't have run that – or I'd hope they wouldn't have run that offense because they'd have a better quarterback. It's just a stupid game to play. We did this with Zach Wilson. Oh, well, if Zach Wilson was in the SEC, you'd all love him. But he wasn't. J.J. McCarthy is one of the greatest hypothetical quarterbacks of all time, but it's not the hypothetical football league. It's the National Football League. So you got to stay grounded in reality. You can only work off what you have on the tape. You can only work off what you have on the film, on the field, in the interviews, Senior Bowl, all that. That's what you're looking at. That's what you're not looking at. What if Jaden Daniels played? What if J.J. McCarthy played at LSU? Would his numbers have been better? Yeah, probably. They threw the ball more and they had really good receivers. But Michigan had a good offense too. Let's not sleep on Michigan's offense. Joe Moore award-winning offensive line. Roman Wilson is going to be a top 100 pick, maybe even a top 50 pick. Colson Loveland, the tight end, is going to be a first-round pick next year. He's not draft eligible this year. A.J. Barner's not bad either. They're a tight end who's in the draft this year. So it's not like he was 2011 Cam Newton throwing a nobody. It's not like he's Drake May, where it was him, Tez Walker, and Amarian Hampson against the world. So work with what you have on the tape. And the tape tells me Jaden Daniels. The other thing about that take, too, is – that implies that J.J. McCarthy was a better college football player than Jaden Daniels, which, being a good college football quarterback doesn't necessarily make you a good NFL quarterback. Tim Tebow's enough evidence of that alone. But Jaden Daniels is a better college quarterback than J.J. McCarthy. I can't believe that's even up for debate. So that was weird. I don't know where this is all coming from. J.J. McCarthy's carrying trade at this point as his hype team. I don't want to pick on the guy too much because, like, he's not bad. He's going to be a first-round pick. But third overall, over Jaden Daniels, over Drake. And I still think Jaden Daniels is going second, for what it's worth. So even over Drake May, hard pass. I would still take Penix. And I don't think that's what's going to happen. I still think Michael Penix is a better bet. They're close. I still think Michael Penix is a better bet than J.J. McCarthy. The drop-off is whoever that fifth quarterback is to Bo Nix. That's the real surprise, is that there's a bigger drop-off there than maybe we initially thought.
Yeah, because that's my whole thing, too, is because I feel like the draft ultimately, look, we know who's going one. But it's what happens at two is what can really open up the box of opportunities. Because if it's Drake May or if it's Jaden Daniels at two, I kind of agree with you just because of the Cliff Kingsbury offensive coordinator hire in Washington. Because Jaden Daniels seems like that Cliff Kingsbury prototype quarterback.
He's kind of just a taller Kyler Murray. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So instead of Mighty Mouse, we got, let's call it Major Mouse.
A mouse.
A mouse. That's a good way to put it. More than anything, because obviously, look, we all know what we want the Patriots to do, whether it's – I've seen the talks, too, with Marvin Harrison Jr., where I'm just like – everyone's like, oh, hey, you have to get your weapons in there, and then you get your quarterback. With the Patriots, I've always viewed this as a long-term – not, like, long-term, but, like, it's not, like, 2024, hey, $100 million in cap, get the quarterback, guns blazing, and go. No, this is going to be a, hey, you get your pieces in place, year one. Like, I expect growing pains probably in September, October, where there's a couple – head-scratching games, you know, where it's like, hey, you could have won, but you didn't do this or that, to where I look at 25 or 26 to be that competitive window. Now, where I was going with all this is, the second-round pick, do you look more at lineman, or do you look at more receiver for that pick, or are you going to wait and see how the board falls first?
Yeah, I think big picture, you look at how the board falls first. I was actually just talking about this. I did Patriots beat with Brian Hines before we recorded this, and the wide receiver class is just so deep that I was really leaning tackle with the second pick, whatever that is. Maybe it's trading up, maybe it's trading down, but like tackle with that second pick and then getting your wide receiver. And Elliott Wolf, obviously in Green Bay, had history finding these really good day two receivers, Davante Adams, guys like that. But, you know, I look at it now, and if you don't find the guy in the draft, you're not getting him in free agency. You're not. Like, Calvin Ridley's okay. I'm not going to say Calvin Ridley's bad. I don't think he's a definitive number one. I don't. And not that the guy you take on day three is definitely either. Like, you're hoping you find your Puka Nacua, but I just don't see how else you're getting that guy. Now I look at it where Tyron Smith is still available. Yeah. Do you go out? Do you sign Tyron Smith just as a bridge? And look, tackle's been their biggest need for four off seasons in a row. It'd be nice if we could just put that thing to bed for a minute. They have too many needs where you just get to get picky like that. Sign Tyron Smith. All right, you duct tape the left tackle position. Michael Nwenu's back. That's your right tackle. And then you go quarterback receiver. And next year becomes all about tackles, and you finally answer that question long term. Because in the same boat at, hey, you can maybe get some guys, you know, in like the 75 to 80 range, who most years would be top 50 because of how good this receiver class is. You can also maybe get guys, like, I look at it, do you trade up from 34? If a guy like A.D. Mitchell falls to 25, 26, if you're feeling really bold, and a guy like Brian Thomas falls to 20, 21, 22, I wouldn't give up the future first, but if you can make it happen without doing that, and now, boom, you got your quarterback. Boom, you've got, I mean, A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas project as true number one outside coverage dictating receivers. All right, and now you've duct tape tackled together with Tyron Smith. You got Michael Nwenu on the other side. That'll work for now. There's still moves you need to make in what's going to be a multi-year process, but that'll work for now. You put a decent structure around your rookie quarterback. And then again, next year, we start talking a lot about Zion Johnson and that tackle class. That, I'm more open to that plan now in between what's happened with free agency and guys going back to their teams, what we saw at the combine. I'm more open to that plan now than maybe I was a couple weeks ago.
So when I look at the wide receiver class, like Ladd McConkey's a guy right away where I'm just like, I see the hands, I see the speed, and I'm like, if he's there at 34, you run the ticket in. Kingsley was another one that I blank on his last name, but the lineman from
Stuart Mattia.
Yeah, from BYU. And I don't remember his name, but I was watching him yesterday, and we've seen it in the last few years at the combine where guys who come in and they just have a vibe or an aura about them. We saw Quinn Miners from who's on Denver now, and right. Cody Mauch. Now there's this offensive lineman prospect from Wyoming. Kid's got a bit of a good, he's got a good hair. He just,
yeah, Frank Crum.
Crum, exactly. I look at him and I'm like, I would just like to have him just like, I don't know what it is. I've never seen any film on him, but I'm like, for the vibes and what it could bring to the offensive line, I'm like, you know what? I would take a flyer if Crum's still there, like in day two. I'm not sure where his projection is at the moment, but because that's the other thing too with this draft class. I've seen a lot of people say that this is one of the top offensive lineman draft classes that we've had in a very long time as well. So I think it's going to be very interesting just to see how everything plays out for the most part. But I don't even have to say like this whole draft's going to be like, you know, it's a make it or break it draft. I think first round, yes, absolutely. But like day two and day three, if you get hit on a few picks, it's great. But like, I'm not out here to say like, you know, hey, they have to go and hit a home run in every single draft pick this year. You know, this is the year where you kind of get the pieces in place to where next year you kind of, like you say, you get your franchise offensive tackle and you try to go for it.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, to the plan I just talked about, you go on day three, a guy like Frank Crum is actually somebody exactly I talked about when I was laying this plan out earlier. Another one would be Tylan Grable from UCF, who tested very well and fits the mold of what the Packers generally look for, a tackle under Elliott Wolf. You go out, you get one of those guys, you don't need to use a day two pick on Crum, I think. He's going to be a day three pick, but you get one of those guys in like the fifth, sixth round. And, you know, like with Grable, for instance, right? Good athlete. I wouldn't say size a plus, but it's not a negative. Like, he's big enough. He can play both sides. He just needs to put more strength. He just needs to be stronger. He just needs more muscle in his upper body. So you draft him in the fifth or sixth round, knowing you're only going to play him in case of emergency. You lock him in the weight room for a year. And the next year, like, hey, maybe, you know, yeah, here's an option. Here's a guy you have that maybe he fills a role for you somewhere down the road. You could absolutely do that. Like, they should not draft a tackle. They should come away with a tackle at some point. It's just maybe now you can wait a little bit longer. But the other thing is there's maybe more, like you said, guys like Frank Crum, guys like Grable, there's more project. I think the combine showed us there may be some more project tackles in this class than it initially looked like.
Yeah, exactly. And then even I just wanted to pivot to free agency because I feel like this year's free agency class, like I said, the offensive talent's not that impressive. And I'm not to say that they're not impressive, but you know what I mean. That there's no marquee people, especially considering the most marquee player who, I'll be honest with you, I was kind of skeptical about the Pats giving Mike Evans a lot of money. I know, and that's, I hate saying that just because he's 31. He's going to be 31 at the season starting. I just turned 30. So it's like this whole thing where I'm like, holy crap, veterans in the NFL are my age now. I'm officially old.
Yeah,
so,
I don't want to think about, I'm turning 30 later this month. I don't want to think about that.
You know, it's just like, it's like one of those things I think about, but when I look at that contract, like I understand Tampa keeping him and like doing what they had to do, but from the Patriot perspective, not to say that there's the drop off, but just to expect him to come in and put up a 1,000-yard season and have this, like I say, he's one of the most underrated players, is a little illogical. So I'm ready for next week for Patriots Twitter just to freak out when, you know, they're not going to go up there and get a wide receiver immediately. Because a player, like, if he's not tagged, he's let walk, obviously, Christian Wilkins. But Josh Allen's another name I've been keeping tabs on. The defensive edge people, not the quarterback.
Yeah, no, the better Josh Allen, absolutely. I'd throw Brian Burns in that mix. So I was, you know, people have...
Dysfunctional teams do dysfunctional things.
You're out on Brian Burns?
No, Carolina not.
Oh, Carolina letting him go. Yeah. So, like, don't get me wrong, Wilkins would be a good player. And if they sign Christian Wilkins... I wouldn't be upset. Now, I would worry a little bit. Are they doing essentially what the Red Sox did with Xander Bogaerts and Trevor Story, where they're signing Christian Wilkins, they're going to pair him with Barmore for a year, and then this is instead of paying Barmore. That would make me nervous. That
I wouldn't mama home.
Love. Right. If you're going to sign him and then extend Barmore and play the two of them next to you together, like that's great. That's fun. They're two good players. But again, it's a good sign. It's a very good sign. If you sign Christian Wilkins, assuming you also extend Barmore. Okay. It's a very good signing. But is it a great signing? And to me, getting a guy like a Brian Burns, getting a guy like a Josh Allen, if I'm going to pay, because Christian Wilkins is not coming cheap, but at that point, if I'm going to give out a big bag freaking contract on defense, give me a guy at a premium position. Legarius Sneed's off the market. I'd throw him in this if he's available, but right now it's looking like Brian Burns and Josh Allen. I'll pay the extra $8 or $9 million a year to get a 15, 16 sack guy. You're going to lose. It seems like you're going to lose Josh Uchain for agency. It was reported tonight. They haven't offered him a contract. Matthew Judon is over 30. He's coming off a significant injury. He's in the last year of his deal. We've seen how these elite, as good of an interior rusher as Christian Wilkins is, he's an interior rusher. And unless you're Aaron Donald, those guys don't impact games the way these premier edge pass rushers do. So if you're going to spend anyway, spend, go to the top of the market. I personally prefer Josh Allen just because it would be hilarious to watch him dominate the Bills. But I would like Brian Burns is a freaking badass on the field, man. I'd love to watch that guy every week too. So if they're going to go splash on defense, like Wilkins is still my third guy. And again, I wouldn't be upset about that, but go get the pass rusher, make the real splash, go get the guy you're talking about, you know, potential all pro, maybe defensive player of the year candidate. That's the kind of guy I'd like to see him get.
Yeah, like I just say Christian Wilkins because obviously his name's been in the rumor mill, but at the same time, too, right. I would love for that edge pairing, too, also because Dietrich Wise as well is getting older. Matthew Judon's an interesting one because it's like, do they offer him a new deal this offseason? Do they wait till next year? Or because he seems like that kind of guy where he seems comfortable here for the rest of his career. I don't know if that's just me or if that's the vibe I'm getting, and maybe he's the general manager one day. We don't know this. But I want to say the Josh Uche comment. Yeah, I've been saying that he's been gone just because I feel like he's going to go somewhere where someone's going to let him just rush the quarterback.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what he's best at. You know, just let him get after the quarterback and piss off Patriot fans being like, why didn't we sign him? It's just like...
Right, Chandler Jones, again. And Chandler Jones would have never put those numbers up in New England, and they made the right move to move on from when they didn't. They got Joe Tooney out of it. It's pretty good. Yeah. But yeah, it's the same thing where I just don't think he's totally a fit for what they want to do. And man, if you upgrade Josh Uche to Brian Burns, you upgrade Josh Uche to
Josh Allen,
what a freaking move that would be. And then you get Christian Gonzalez back, and then you get Matthew Judon back. You're talking about a legitimate top three defense in the league. And they should have been top 10 last year. They weren't because there's just too many short fields from the offense in terms of scoring where they were giving up 20, 25-yard touchdown drives. But yeah, it would be super fun to see them add one of these edge rushers. That would be great.
I'm just ready for a lot of New England Patriot, Big Ten style football games next year. You know, where they're winning like a 13-10 absolute.
Hell yeah, baby! Punt to win. Love me some Big Ten West. Some Big Ten West.
Little Iowa Northwestern at Wrigley Field.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Iowa Purdue. That Iowa Minnesota game that got Iowa should have won on a punt return touchdown. The ref made a horrible call. All of it. Give me all of it.
There's something really special about the Big Ten West. But when you go to the offensive side of the football, I feel like, you know, everyone's so concerned on wide receiver. My big question for you is two other positions of need, which is, and people are going to go need tight end, because guess what? There's not a tight end under contract right now. And running back, mainly because, look, Zeke's free agent. We don't know what's going to happen there. And Ramondre Stevenson's got a big question mark surrounding him, because guess who needs a new deal at the end of next season? So if you were to look at from those two there in free agency, I won't even ask what's the higher priority, but just where would you rather spend the money if you're the Patriots?
Oh, definitely tight end. They just last longer, and it's a more productive position. You can go in the draft. You can get a good running back. I'd make tight running backs a need, but I'd make tight end a priority. I look at Noah Fant, and I just think he's such a great fit for what they want to do, for what this offense is going to look like. Well-rounded player, great athlete, physical. I don't think you can rule out Austin Hooper, Harrison Bryant, who obviously have experience playing with Alex Van Pelt. Gerald Everett's another guy I'd watch, but I'd go make the investment at tight end. I'd go make the investment at tight end, because, again, running back sign later. You can get guys in the draft. They can find a running back. They do need to add a second running back. I'd like them to go to the draft and kind of reset the clock, but you know, even a guy like DeAndre Swift might not sign in the first week. AJ Dillon's probably not going to sign in the first week. You can let the other cards, you're going to miss the tight ends. If you put that one on the back, you're going to miss the tight ends. Let the cards fall where they may. You can go get a good running back second, third week of free agency. I don't worry as much about that in terms of the availability of the players. Whereas you got to go get a good tight end, and that market's going to dry up a lot quicker.
Do you make signing Hunter Henry a priority, or do you let him walk?
I don't know. I'd like to bring him back. I don't know how interested he's going to be in that. I look at a guy that's 30 years old, has spent most of his career on bad teams. Last year was a nightmare for him. Now he's got to bring along another rookie quarterback after going through the whole Mac Jones experience, where he's going to get interest from contenders. He's going to have a chance to go somewhere and actually compete for a Super Bowl for the first time in his life, and probably make a decent amount of money doing it. I don't think he's super tied to the New England area. I mean, he's kind of talked about, like, yeah, it's been nice being here, but he's never really, you know, committed to wanting to stay.
Yeah.
Would he come back for the right price? I'm sure. I don't know how much I'm overexerting to keep Hunter Henry with the other options on the market. If he says, you know, I want best offer plus 10%, I'll go call Noah Fant. At that point, go win your Super Bowl. Best of luck. And it's nothing against the guy. He's every right to do it. But I wonder how willing he is to come back to this situation after what he went through the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's very fair. Because, like, look, 2022, he was misused on a lot of levels. They tried putting him into a blocking position, but we all know when you put him in a blocking position, it does not work out in his favor. But then 2023, look, they did the best he could, considering that there were some injuries there. There was just the production levels weren't there. Surprisingly, Farrell Brown was one of the more impactful tight ends on the team last year. So I just wanted to ask that, just because it's that whole part of that 2021 class, which everyone kind of looks at now as this dud of a class, but at the same time, too, the Patriots were just given money and they knew what to do with it. Meanwhile, I feel like, you know how Jerod Mayo came out a few weeks ago and had that, we're going to burn cash on fire, to then he walked it back? I feel like it's a mix of two things. One, because they have a lot of in-house work to do, and two, Robert Kraft probably said, hey, we're not going to go, we're not going to spend crazy. So I just want people to kind of be prepared for next week, when if these big free agents start going and going and going, the Pats only get one or two. Because, like, I remember 2021 being like, hey, if we get Smith or Henry, it's fine. Monday, boom, they get Jonnu Smith. And then Tuesday morning, boom, Hunter Henry. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Which then will lead me to my next candidate. And do we see Kendrick Bourne, who looks a little more tied to the New England area? Like, where do you see that going, or what have you heard about him so far?
He's going to have some value. He's going to have some interest. He's a good player. He managed to produce in this offense last year, which says something. he's going to, the contenders that need that like legitimate second threat.
Yeah.
The two teams that have been mentioned with him are Buffalo and Houston. Buffalo makes a ton of sense opposite Diggs. And Houston, assuming they take a wide receiver in the first round, you put Kendrick Bourne next to him, you've got a really good room right there. He's going to have a chance to go to a contender and make some money. I think he does like it here. I think he's a guy that would be more open to coming back. But if he has a chance to go win a Super Bowl and make a little bit more money, he's going to do it. The knee injury is also variable here. If you're a contender, you can kind of afford to throw some money at him. And if he's not totally right off the knee, you have enough talent that, all right, you missed, but you can afford it. If Bourne's asking for like a lot of guaranteed money, and I'm like relatively a lot, but yeah. If he's asking for, you know, a good amount of guaranteed money, the Patriots can't really afford to burn significant capital on him and then have his knee not be right. They can't afford a miss like that. I'm a big fan of Kendrick Bourne. I was pulling my hair out all year in 2022 when they wouldn't play him. I was ready to take the biggest victory lap this year before he got hurt. I'm a huge fan of his, but the injuries are what they are. And if he wants a lot of guaranteed money, you got to have another place. We talked about there's not a ton of guys available. That's the other thing. He's helped by a weak market. If you can pay a little bit more and get Calvin Ridley at that point, you do that. If nobody else remotely close, you might have to bite the bullet. But I understand the hesitance with him, and he is a player that probably makes more sense. If he were just a free agent, if he were not coming from here, if he were just not an internal free agent, if he was coming from somewhere else, I would say he's not the kind of guy that makes sense for the Patriots right now. He makes more sense for a contender. The fact he was here, he's a good chemistry guy, I think helps his case. But it is kind of a weird situation. And yeah, look, and he's going to try to – he's 28. He suffered a torn ACL. He knows his last chance to get paid. He's going to try to get paid as he should, as is his right to do.
It's exactly what Mike Evans just did. It's what Chris Jones is trying to do right now, which that's right. Another story. So I'm not out here to say, oh, is Chris Jones coming to the Patriots? No. He's either signing in Kansas City or he's going to go to some random team which just throws an absolute bag at him.
That could be the Patriots. But again, I'd rather the edge rusher.
Oh, and the more I think about it too, and especially because we haven't mentioned Devon Godchow either, who's still on this team, unless for some reason he's a cut candidate, but I can't see that being a thing, especially with Lawrence Guy going. So we'll have to wait and see ultimately what happens. But one thing I keep thinking about with this team for next year, I feel like it could be like 2020. And for everyone going, oh, that was such a bad year. And I'm like, yeah, the team wasn't that good on paper, but they still finished 7-9 with a missing the playoffs in week 15, I think it was. So when I look at this 2020 team, and I also say that too, because look, Cam Newton with his legs made a lot of plays that like we did not see Jones or Zappe do over the last 3 years. So if you get Jaden Daniels in here, hell, even if you get Drake May in here, who can run around with the ball, maybe they'll win you a couple games that last year, you know what they lost. Maybe they win the Colts game in Germany. Maybe they beat the Giants in the Meadowlands. Maybe they beat the Commanders, because if I could go back in time, I would change all three of those games in a heartbeat. So I feel like there's a lot of potential with this team. I just don't want people to get under the impression gun where it's going to be like, hey, they're going to go on a crazy win streak like they did in 2021 and get all the way to the playoffs. No, I'd rather have them miss in 24 just so, you know, that hunger starts to build to then 25 to make the push to get there.
Well, let's see what it looks like. You know, the rookie court, I don't think they're going to be Houston. That's such an incredible, you know, first-year quarterback. But I wouldn't say that's a bad thing. Like, and getting the playoff experience is good. I would just say the issue was after the 2021 season, they stopped adding to the team. That you look at what they did. They really didn't sign any free agents in 2022. Remember Terrence Mitchell? He was like their biggest free agent signing that year. Last year, they tried to do a little bit more, but Juju Smith-Schuster had a bad knee. That, you know, kind of didn't really add any true impact players in the draft. Gonzalez was a great addition. He got hurt, but Cole Strange was never going to be an impact addition. Tyquan Thornton was a misevaluation. The goal should be get better for 2024. And then regardless of what happens, continue to get better in 2025. Again, they got better in 21. And I think they just stopped and counted on internal growth. And there's always room to count on internal growth. I'm not saying you don't do that, but they had opportunities to make the team better. And they bypass them, I think, out of either an abundance of caution or a level of comfort, or I'll never know exactly what it was. We'll never know exactly what it was. That they you said, like, keep the hunger. I don't think the issue was that the players on the field in 21 got to the playoffs and stopped caring. Yeah. I think the issue was, this is what we did with our core. Our defense was decimated by COVID at the end of the year, so we never got a full look at that. If we just run it back with this group, and then obviously don't make a defensive coach your offensive coordinator. I should add that too. Don't do that. That's a bad idea. But I think the idea was, we got so close. We don't need to overextend. We don't need to risk rocking the boat, because we'll get there with internal growth. That's just not how the NFL works. The rich need to keep getting richer. So I'm not so much worried about the product on the field. I think winning is good. I think playoff experience would be good. Anytime you make the playoffs, I think it's helpful. What would have been really helpful is if in 22, they hired a real offensive coordinator. They went out, they got the wide receiver, and then you get back to the playoffs. And now suddenly it's not everybody's first playoff game. They know what it's like when the lights are bright. That to me is where it got lost in translation last time on the rebuild.
So when I say this, I'm only saying this in part just because I don't want to get my hopes up for 2024. You know, I don't want to be going and being like last year I did this where I'm like, hey, there'll be a fringe playoff team like 22, just missed out like 8 and 9. Where this year I could see them. And when I say like just missed out, like I'm not saying that they're going to be, I'm not saying, hey, be bad again. No, I'm thinking what we saw from Chicago last year, you know, where, hey, September, October, there's some bad losses in there. And then like, November, December, hey, it's a little bit too late, but yes, steal a few wins here or there. You win a couple ugly games. Like Chicago won on Monday Night Football this past year. I think it was like 12-10, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Like, you know, going back to our Big Ten West style football games.
Right.
To where then 2025, like, you know, the fan base, instead of being incredibly fickle on Twitter, is more optimistic, even though I feel like there's always going to be fickle Pats fans out there. That's just the point I don't want to make. Or even, hell, what we saw from the Detroit Lions in 2022, where towards the end of the season, everyone next year's going like, I'll always remember this from all the stuff Tony Romo said throughout the years, but the 2020 AFC Championship game, Kansas City, Buffalo, where he's like, hey, New England's going to be back next year. You know, they got some money to spend. To where then like in December, January next year, everyone's on that. Hey, New England's coming. Like they had a few lean years, but like they're starting to come back. That's where I can kind of see it being like if I had to put a ceiling on this team right now, and I don't like doing this because, look, free agency hasn't happened. The draft hasn't happened. The schedule hasn't happened, which
right.
Even though they don't have a fourth place schedule, they really do not have an easy schedule next year. So
they don't.
You're fourth place. You have to play Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. So
yeah,
have fun with that. You can play Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, who have a really good defense. Have fun with that. So like the only game I look on their schedule right now where I'm like, yeah, I can definitely see them winning is Arizona and probably New York just because it's New York.
Right. Yeah, no, that's the other difference in 21. They had a cupcake schedule in 21. That's not going to be the case this time around. So we'll get more of a measuring stick, I think, on this team than we ever got on that team.
Yeah. Yeah, because 21 too, even like how they just got that like nice little meaty thick part of the schedule, like where the winning streak started after the Dallas loss, you know, where it was like, hey, play the Jets and you play the Chargers who still weren't proven.
Right.
And it was Carolina.
They had a couple guys too where, you know, got teams were banged up from COVID. And that was just, at the time we probably should have realized how weird that year was. And I think because 2020 was so different, we went both in terms of the COVID stuff and just, hey, we're watching the Patriots without Tom Brady and how alien that felt. I think 21 just being one step closer to normalcy felt so normal. In retrospect, it wasn't as much as it maybe felt at the time.
Yeah, exactly. To where it's just like, hey, winning a game where your quarterback throws for 3 passing attempts in a windstorm in Buffalo is viewed as, hey, we just beat the Bills at home. Meanwhile, it should have been looked on as, hey, bit of a red flag, but we didn't see it at the time. I feel like the Colts game was really the eye-opener to where the season kind of was, hey, maybe this team's not who we thought they were.
Right.
One other thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I've been doing this every week with a couple people on here, notably actually someone you know, A to Z Sports, Sophie Weller's been coming on here too.
Yeah, Sophie's great.
Yes, she is. We actually were on last night along with another friend of ours, and we've been reviewing the Dynasty throughout like the 2 episodes, just 2 episodes at a time. I know a lot of people have been pissed off about it. Me, myself, I read the book. So I always like to say this for people. If you haven't read the book, read the book. Because it'll make a lot of things clear. I know skipping over 2003, 2004, and even 2010 was a bit painful to see. Just because, you know, those were such great seasons, even though they lost to the Jets in the playoffs. But how have you been enjoying the documentary so far? Or have you just, like, are you not enjoying it? Like, what, how have you been feeling about the dynasty?
I really like the first two episodes. Obviously, there's a little nostalgia, but I a lot of it just feels incomplete. And I know people, I'll say that, and people say, well, it's all in the book. But like, when somebody writes a book and then the movie comes out and it's not the same as the book, don't we always bitch about how it's not the same as the book, right?
Every Harry Potter
they
movie.
Changed it. Right, exactly. So why is this any different? Yes, I know it's in the book. That's great. I'm not watching the book, though. I'm not reading the book. I'm watching the movie. So I'm concerned with the movie. I just, having lived through a lot of that, a lot of it's been twisted. The timeline's kind of skewed on some stuff. They've left stuff out. I think leaving out Dick Rabine in the telling of the Patriots drafting Tom Brady was wrong. The way they told the Deflategate story to not mention Eric Mangini was popped for it 6 months prior. Spygate. Sorry. To not mention Eric Mangini was popped for it 6 months prior. To not mention what they did wasn't technically illegal. It went against that league memo and all of that. Like, it was very much half told. And again, look, I get it. It's not, they weren't going to go on there and break down the all 22 for us of all the Super Bowls. I get that's not what it was. And you can't tell the story of the New England Patriots dynasty without talking about Spygate, without talking about Deflategate, without talking about Aaron Hernandez and things like that. I get that. I do. I understand that. But if you're going to do warts and all, I have no problem. But warts and all implies that there is some all. And it's really just felt like warts. And that's bothered me. And I'm trying to understand who this is for. Because Patriots fans, you're not learning that much new. There's some interesting anecdotes here and there. You know, Tom Brady telling Matt Castle, yo, I'm going to tell your mom your son died because he couldn't see the corner blitz. That was a good line.
I love that.
That was a good line. But I'm not learning anything new. And if anything, it's ticking me off how certain narratives are being adjusted. I'm like, I lived through that. That is not how that went. I've had that thought four or five times. Or, hey, you know, you're saying there's one point in the Hernandez thing. I forget exactly what it was, but they're like, we don't know why he did this. And I was like, no, we do. That's been reported. It's in another documentary. We absolutely know the answer to that question. So there's been a lot of omissions and things like that. And I just think some of the spit. So it's not for Patriots fans because we lived it. We know what it is. Yeah. And it's not an accurate telling of what it is. I don't really know if other fans would be super interested in it because it's not their team. I think it's really just for people who make their whole identity hating the Patriots, or people who are loosely Patriots, loosely football fans or loosely sports fans, but really like shows like Succession and Game of Thrones and just want to view the drama angle of it. Is it an interesting documentary in its own right? Yeah. I wouldn't say it does a great job of telling the story it's trying. It's claiming to tell. I think there's a story they want to tell and they're telling it, but that's not the story it was advertised. It was advertised to tell the story of the Patriots dynasty. What it's really telling is basically just what the relationship was like between Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Robert Kraft. And that is a big part of the story. That is a big part of the story of the Patriots dynasty. It's hardly the whole story. And I just would have hoped more of that other stuff got in there. Like with The Last Dance, they did a really good job of diving into everything that happened behind the scenes. But as they dove into it, this is what was happening on the court. And they did a really good job weaving in, this is what was happening on the court. This is what was going on behind the scenes. This is what was, right? Dennis Rodman goes to Las Vegas and goes on that whole bender as the team plays this crucial stretch, right? Things like that. I feel like they've just completely lost the plot with what the actual football team was doing. And this is just about a bunch of people who happen to live in New England and work for a football team. And in that sense, I feel a little let down. I wasn't expecting America's Game. I wasn't expecting Four Rings to Glory, but there is more room for football in this than they've allowed.
I feel like we're going to get more football, especially with the 28-3. I just feel like the Deflategate episode, like three of the last four episodes that are left are going to be like watches where it's just, you know, the dissolving of the relationship. I'm still very interested to see that Danny Amendola quote where it was, you know, we played for Tom, but we worked for Bill. I know the relationship wasn't the best. I'm just interested to see the context behind that. The only thing I'll say about the Aaron Hernandez episode, because we talked about this a lot last night, was I feel like not so much that Bill was a scapegoat, but I feel like it was more Robert and Jonathan trying to get out as the good guys, you know, with the whole, oh, we'll get you the best defense attorney, you know, like going down to see him in the gym and saying he got schnookered by him. Jonathan Kraft calling him immediately and saying, hey, we got to cut this guy. And then Bill apparently saying, oh, no, we're not cutting him. And even to the point, too, with the other episodes, and I'll say this, too, for other fan bases, unless you're a Giants fan, I feel like you're not going to enjoy this documentary that much.
Right.
But besides the Drew Bledsoe one, we haven't really, and obviously there was the Aaron Hernandez stuff that's completely different, but besides Drew Bledsoe, we really haven't seen that much on a player's journey throughout New England. Hopefully we get that with Gronk. We've seen that with, because even too with Tom, he's like kind of come in and out of it. Like even
seeing that's another one. Yeah. Sorry, but like Drew Bledsoe getting traded. That's something that doesn't really ever get talked about. Like he comes in the Pittsburgh game, he wins in that game, and then you just sort of in the general telling of the story, the way it's usually relayed, that kind of goes away. But they traded $100 million quarterback in the division. He was better than Brady the next year. That's like, I would have liked to hear about that. That Lawyer Malloy getting released and going.
Yes.
The whole saga of adding guys like Rodney Harrison and Corey Dillon, who are seen as maybe red flag kind of free agents. That's the kind of stuff I was hoping we would get. And instead it's just Bill and Kraft going back and forth.
Yeah. Cause even you're right too. Cause I always remember from the book that after obviously the, what happened with Lawyer Malloy and like Tom Brady, and I think Ty Law and a bunch of other guys going to his house because Lawyer was just beyond pissed that he got cut. Even I remember in the book, they mentioned the whole stuff with Scott Zolak going up and talking to Drew Bledsoe and saying like, hey, where do you go from next year? And he just looks at them and goes like, I have no effing idea. So it's just, like you said, they're leaving out a lot to where we know what happened. And even too, like, that's why I say, read the book, not to sound like full of myself or like I'm better than you. Right. I'm saying it to look like, if you want the real details, because it goes back and starts with Kraft in the 60s and the 70s about even to like how they briefly mentioned, you know, him acquiring the parking and then him just slowly acquiring assets. And even to mentioning, hey, maybe the team goes to St. Louis. Maybe the team would have went to Hartford if Kraft hadn't bought it. It's just, they mentioned like how he bought it and then the family upbringing. And like, I've loved it just because it's the Patriots one, but I kind of see like, look how a lot of people haven't enjoyed it. And you've put that in a very good perspective.
Yeah.
Cause it's kind of like the opposite of what we got with the Florida Gators documentary. You know, everyone was ready for this, like no holds barred.
Yeah.
Like what the hell happened down there? And it said it was a fluff piece to make Urban Meyer look good. Meanwhile,
it's funny you say that. I said to somebody the other day, if you combine, actually meant to tweet this. If you combine the Florida Gators doc and the dynasty, you actually get a pretty good, well-rounded football documentary.
Yeah.
The in between the two of them is the spot where you kind of want to be, but it really is the two extremes.
Yeah, it's kind of like the, you don't show enough to where you didn't show that much, you know, where it's kind of like you canceled out the bad with Florida because everyone wanted to see like these guys getting arrested. Because they even mentioned it in the Patriots doc, in the Dynasty episode with Hernandez, where it was like this whole, oh, hey, I can do this and I'll get out of trouble.
So the Dynasty talked more about Hernandez getting arrested at Florida than the Florida doc did. But I think in telling the story of either program between a passing mention, one sentence, and an entire 34-minute episode, I think the correct amount of time to spend on Aaron Hernandez is probably about right in the middle of those two. So the sweet spot's there, but you're right. It's a really interesting dichotomy of that.
You know, because it's just like, because like Florida Gators, everyone's expecting this. Like I enjoyed it just because, look, I didn't know much about the Florida Gators team, and I just love seeing stuff like Major Wright just basically being like, yeah, I'm going to go completely rock this player in the national championship against Oklahoma. Meanwhile, the Patriots won. Like, I'd like just going back down, taking that trip back down memory lane. But I just hope that they finish these last four episodes off right instead of this, what everyone's kind of calling a love fest to Kraft, where it's kind of like Robert Kraft is trying to show this to get himself into canon. I've seen some people say, but I don't know if that's just people talking or not. Moving off that, going back to the draft before we wrap things up today. Obviously, look, you know your talent. You know college prospects in and out. You're the boss. You can be a Boston equivalent of a great draft scout. I want you to – I have two things for you.
Yeah.
Who's a day two or a late day two or day three player that you think Patriot fans should be keeping an eye on?
Okay.
And who is a personal draft crush of yours?
Ooh, all right. Good questions. Late day two, early day three – well, so I'll give you, this is probably more early day three than late day two, but he's just a guy I really like for the Patriots, and it's either trading back in the third or maybe you get him with your initial fourth round pick, and it's Mo Kamara, the defensive end from Colorado State. 6'1", 248, plays with just an unreal motor. The dude's a battering ram. He's ferocious. sometimes it works against him, honestly. That's one of his worst knocks, but that's certainly coachable. Tremendous production, albeit at a lower level. He's built like Anfernee Jennings, but he plays like Josh Uche. So I think you put a guy like this in like that in this defense, especially if you're going to lose Josh Uche, like he's a guy, his game may never evolve beyond this, but you put him on the field on third down, you line him up opposite the left tackle, you tell him pin your ears back and go, right? I think he'll be good at that in the NFL. And the Patriots have a role for that guy. So I really like Kamara. He's one of my draft crushes. Another guy, this is doesn't solve the Patriots issues at receiver, but if they want to double up, Bub Means from Pittsburgh, 6'1", 206, tested well to combine, tested right in the range of, you know, the average receiver the Packers drafted after Elliott Wolf. Kind of a tough evaluation because he was in a Pittsburgh offense that last year that did nobody any favors. So you got to kind of go back, watch him at Louisiana Tech. A guy that's not amazing at any one thing, but not bad at anything. He's just a good, solid, well-rounded player. You get him in your lineup, you make him like your fourth wide receiver, you have him play on special teams. You're going to get 4 good years out of him if you take him in the 6th round. My other draft crush, not for the Patriots, but I just can't get enough, is Joe Milton, the quarterback from Tennessee. I've said this before. He's the most entertaining player in the draft. That doesn't mean he's good. That doesn't mean he's going to be good. But you can't watch Joe Milton and not have a big smile on your face. He can throw the ball 75 yards without really trying.
Yeah.
He didn't run at the combine. He probably would have run in the 4.5s at 6'5", 230. He's an absolute tank with the ball in his hands. This is the best way I can sum up Joe Milton, though, to people who aren't familiar with him. If you need somebody to throw the ball 80 yards, Joe Milton's going to throw it 80 yards. He can do that. If you need somebody to throw the ball 80 yards, Joe Milton's going to throw it 80 yards. If you need somebody to hit a 5-yard slant, Joe Milton's going to throw it 80 yards. That's just what he does. So, part of me wants the Patriots to draft him just because the 4 years of preseason tape, like 4 years watching him in the preseason, they'll be the most entertaining preseason games any NFL team's ever had. I also don't think, you know, he's 24 years old. He's 25 years old. If he's 21, he'd be a lot more interesting to me because there's room to grow, but he's played 5 years of college ball. He's been a starter at multiple schools. This kind of just seems like who he is. I don't think there's much long-term there, but some team is going to fall in love with his arm strength and his mobility and say, we can fix him and take him higher than he should probably go. But whatever team he gets drafted by will be must-watch preseason football. Must-watch. He's going to be electric.
You know what? You pretty much answered the question just because it's like, look, I've liked Joe Milton too. We saw him chuck it 80 yards. I don't know why, but he kind of, like the way he throws it, it's kind of Jameis Winston-esque where, hey, look, he may not hit the target, but it's just he's going to get it out there. He's going to go and he's going to chuck the football. Even two to him throwing the ball an orange 106 yards last year at the most orange bowl of all time with Clemson in Tennessee. It's going to be a very fun just offseason in general the next few weeks, the next couple months. If you have time for one more question, I wouldn't mind asking you one more. Free agent then. Who's a free agent that you think that, look, may not be on the Patriots' radar right now that you could see them sign?
So I actually think he is on their radar, but nobody's really talking about him being on their radar. That kind of works. Yeah.
Not a fan radar.
Yeah. Steph Gilmore, I think, makes a ton of sense for them. They need a second boundary corner. I think ideally you get Jonathan Jones back in the slot. You have Christian Gonzalez playing opposite a veteran, works with him, right? Jalen, even if he was back, I'd still say they need to upgrade there. People will say it ended poorly. Look, they brought Malcolm Butler back. And I know that didn't work, but they brought him back. They brought him back in the building. Yeah. So I think Steph Gilmore, he's not going to come back and win Defensive Player of the Year. Like, he's not the guy he was last time he was here, but he still played pretty freaking well last year. He gave you a really good option next to Gonzo. Getting him in the room with Christian Gonzalez to learn from him would be outstanding. And he's just a solid, reliable player. I don't think there's much variance there. Again, I don't think you're getting the Defensive Player of the Year, but I do think you're going to get your money's worth. You're going to get him for 1 year, $12 million, probably 7 or 8 guaranteed. Yeah, I think it makes all the sense. If there wasn't the history of how he left, I think everybody would be talking about the Patriots signing Christian Gonzalez. It's signing Stephon Gilmore.
They want to lock him up. It's fine for me too.
It's there. So maybe people are a little more hesitant, but in a weak cornerback class in free agency with Snead off the board in a weak cornerback class in the draft. I love that match. I love the match for both sides. And for Steph, he gets to come where he's somewhere he's familiar, right? He's been on, I think, four teams in the last 3 years. He gets to come back somewhere he's familiar. He gets to come back somewhere he can be successful. He's going to get to play some good football down the stretch. I don't think he's going to get much more. Like, I think 1 year, $10 million would be competitive for him. Yeah. So he's still going to get a chance to make money. The Patriots have some money to spend. They could throw a little more money at him. And again, I think they'll get their bang for their buck. I just really like that fit. I do, and I'm surprised it's not being talked about more.
I think it's just because everyone within the – like, that's exactly – you basically went where I was exactly going for. I wanted more or less the, hey, the fans aren't exactly talking about it. Because I feel like all I see with Pats fans on Twitter right now is offensive weapons, you know? Get the wide receiver in this offensive free agency class. When the offensive free agency class, look, a lot of guys are either re-signing or being tagged. Two of the guys I really wanted both are getting franchise tagged, which, by the way, not Evans, but – Higgins and Pittman Jr. Those were like my top two targets for them for wide receiver. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, but I appreciate you taking the time to talk. Obviously, folks, for those of you who don't know, actually, no one knows besides Alex and I that Alex and I have been kind of working on this for a few weeks now. So from me to you, I appreciate it. And you know what? I think that does it for us. Alex, thank you very much for coming out. You know what? I know you're very popular, but just for anyone who wants to find you out there, where can they find you?
Yeah, 985thesportshub.com, at Real Alex Barth on Twitter, and the Catch 22 podcast on Patriots.com.
One other thing I actually want to ask you, the Patriots background at the Combine, do we read anything
into that? Trust me. If Evan knows, he would have told me. I've put him through enough hell trying to get that answer out of him. The Mike Flags had the Flying Elvis on him. So I think they just – it's a good look. They brought it because it's a good look. I'd be surprised – I don't think they're getting rid of it. Like I think they're going to do two more throwback games this year, like they've done the last few years. I don't think it's going away, but I would not read into anything beyond that happening.
Yeah, shucks. I just say that because I saw it and I'm like right away. I'm just like,
Yeah. No, it's a good thought, and I checked in on it, but everything I've heard was just that's the backdrop they chose to bring. They have a couple of them. That's the one they packed.
You know what? Aesthetically pleasing, that's all I ask for, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, guys, we'll see you next time on YWC Football Talk. This has been episode 285. For Alex Barth, I'm Griff. Have a good night.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent Podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.